Welcome back, everybody. I'm Richard Krause here till 6 o'clock. And a little bit later on in the show, we'll be talking about the storm. Of course, we'll keep you up to date on what's happening there. And we're going to talk about a bill to standardize the 4-day work week. It's proposed in the United States. Is Canada ready to follow? And do you want that? I kind of don't want it. I don't want it, but I have very specific reasons why, and I'll share those with you a little bit later on. First, though, let's get to the smart speaker segment. Welcome Bruce Arthur, Toronto Star columnist, and Karen Stintz, former city councillor and TTC chair. She's now the president and CEO of Variety Village. Welcome, you both.
Hi, Richard. Thank you very much.
The pleasure.
I'll start off, Bruce, with you just asking if you have any reaction to the Kate Middleton video that was released in the news.
Karen and I were just talking about that off air. I wrote a piece about it last week, and what I wrote was I'm less worried about Kate than I'm worried about how we're reacting to it. Hmm. If you go back and look at how it was the palace's fault to a great degree because of the level of secrecy, which I understand on a human level, but also this is the royals, so different rules apply. But the fact that that picture was allowed to be released, the photoshopped picture, the fact that she was allowed to take the fall for it, that both those things happened. And it turns out that she had cancer that was found after her abdominal surgery and is now undergoing a preventative chemotherapy. It is amazing to me that this is how we process news now in the absence of information. If you look back at the, just the frenzy around Kate in that time, it worries me about how we react now, how we process things. It's kind of a bigger question. In terms of Kate, I'm just glad that, I guess, for her sake, that she's getting the proper medical attention and that it was found.
And Karen?
Yeah, I have to agree. You know, to be honest with you, as a big follower of royalty, but, I do follow it. I actually couldn't make sense of why everybody was so incensed that she did Photoshop something. And I mean, and then, you know, why there was such a violent reaction to it, and then, you know, undermining the royals' ability to tell the truth, which was, I think that was a bit of a stretch. And then to find out this, that she had been going through this, and you know, to your point, Bruce, the fact that she's out there all alone is really alarming. And I understand that King Charles has his own health issues to deal with, but nonetheless, it certainly gives you a sense that, you know, the transition from the queen to the king has left a few holes that the royals need to really tend to in terms of how they manage communication.
We were very careful about how we spoke about it on the air here. If you go through the Twitter feeds, and some of them were quite reputable, it would be, there's a big announcement coming, and it would be doom and gloom. It would be, you know, stuff that turned out to be completely false, but there was so much of it. It is so hard to pick and choose what is true and what isn't, that I think you just have to be very extraordinarily careful about where you get your information from.
Absolutely.
So the names of Ontario clinics found to have been extra billing patients is being kept secret. So data obtained by the CTV News Toronto through a Freedom of Information request found that 183 complaints were made about extra billing in Ontario between January 2021 and December 30th of 2022. Bruce, if you look at that amount of time, that doesn't seem like that many complaints to me. And the amount of money was about $68,000. I fear that those numbers could escalate very quickly. But for right now, I don't know that this is a big deal.
Well, yeah. So the way to look at this for me is, I think there is probably something to be said that maybe it's like an assistant or a secretary or somebody accidentally sent their bill twice, and you don't want to put those people out in the public sphere. That wouldn't necessarily be fair to them. I'm sympathetic to that. The problem I would have is I would feel a lot better about this if I had more confidence in the Ford government's willingness and determination to protect the public from this kind of extra billing, which is going to be, I think you're right, Richard, is I would guess that it's going to become a much bigger problem as we get a creeping privatization into the system with insufficient oversight, with the wrong profit margins in a system that didn't used to have a profit kind of circle in a lot of different aspects of it. We're heading into a place where there's going to be a lot of boundary testing. And this, okay, you can do this now. Get back to me in a year and see where we're at.
You're listening to The Smart Speakers. Bruce Arthur, Toronto Star columnist, and Karen Stintz, former city councillor and TTC chair, now president and CEO of Variety Village. Karen, how do you feel about this? I mean, you know, Doug Ford has been saying you'll pay with your OHIP card, not your credit card. And with the relatively small amount of complaints, maybe that's true.
Yeah, I don't know that this is a trend towards privatization of healthcare, which again is a misnomer because most of healthcare is delivered in clinics that make money. But nonetheless, you know, I do think that the explanation they gave is insufficient because if there was a mistake made by the provider or the administrative staff, well, then that's an explanation that we understand, but to not categorize the kind of extra billing that occurred and the reasons for it, I think does leave a big question mark into, well, who was extra billed? Was the system billed twice or was an individual billed for services that they shouldn't have had to pay for? And what was the remedy then to that complaint? And so there's a lot we don't know. And I think it is just the tip of the iceberg, as it were, around what we need to know as we move forward and perhaps experiment with different delivery models. These are the kinds of things we need to know going forward.
The non-confidence motion tabled by Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre, everyone's saying, well, it failed yesterday to bring down Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's Liberal minority government over the carbon tax. I don't think that it failed in so much that I don't think anyone really ever expected that it would work. I think what it did is just add one more brick to Poilievre's axe the tax wall that he's building. He said now that this idea of a non-confidence vote is in people's heads. And I think that's all he wanted to do is get that out there. It's clever branding. And I think it's working for him. Bruce, how do you feel about it?
I mean, I think it might be working for him. It's hard to tell because there's such a perfect storm of so many issues that are besetting the Liberal government, from fatigue to the housing crisis to post-pandemic issues to all this stuff. I would say my biggest frustration with the carbon tax debate is that it is taking place almost entirely when it comes to Poilievre's approach to it and the Conservative approach to it in an alternative reality. Like they're not actually arguing on the merits of the policy as the policy exists. And that's, again, what the problem is. The Liberals haven't explained that there are rebates that for probably about 80% of people who pay the carbon tax, it winds up making you whole. But if you're a wealthier person, it's a little worse for you. The fact that the rebates exist and the fact that the Conservatives pretend they don't, and that eliminating the carbon tax would help with affordability, not for most people, it wouldn't. And that's the thing that really bothers me about this debate and every single time they bring it up.
Karen, was this a savvy branding move or is it playing politics?
I think it was an incredibly savvy branding move because, again, it highlights the fact that the Liberals and the NDP are propping each other up and supporting policies that are really unpopular across the country. And you can get into the granular discussion about the policy and its merits, but the reality is, if you have a tax that's intended to change behavior, how do you then go and say most people benefit from the tax? That makes no sense. And intuitively, people understand that makes no sense. And so they don't feel that this is a transparent process. It's not a good policy. The carve-outs to the east completely undermined the entire policy. Now, Saskatchewan isn't paying. This isn't good for the nation. We don't even know if it's good for the environment because at the margins, there's new reports out saying that really the best place to get changes in behavior are through the heavy emitters. So there's so many problems with this policy. And I think the tone deafness of the Liberals and the NDP coalition is on full display. And I think that's what yesterday was intended to highlight, and I think it was highlighted extremely successfully.
You're listening to The Smart Speakers on The Rush on News Talk 1010. Bruce Arthur, Toronto Star columnist, and Karen Stintz, president and CEO of Variety Village. When we come back, we will continue, and we will dig into the LCBO slapping suppliers with $50 million in fines by accusing them of offering cheaper prices to Quebec, and a few other topics that are sort of the hot button topics of the day. I'm Richard Krause, sitting in on The Rush until 6 o'clock. Stay with us. There's lots more to come. I'm Richard Krause, sitting here until 6 o'clock, keeping you company on the drive home. Be careful out there. The snow, and this is my unofficial report, looks like it's coming down a little bit more heavily than it was earlier in the day. So it's going to be a little bit more slippery. Visibility is going to be bad. Got a call earlier from Maria, who is on her way to Hamilton Airport, saying that the visibility is not good out that way. So keep that in mind if you're heading out of the house today. Wear a boots, even if you're wearing a suit like I am, and I hate that. Boots and suits, I don't like it, but it looks like it's going to be necessary for tonight. Anyway, we'll keep you informed about what's going on with the weather as the show continues. If you have any input for us, give us a call, 416-872-1010, and we will get you either on the air or just convey the information if you've seeing any accidents or anything that's happening out in the world there. We're in the midst of the Smart Speakers feature with Bruce Arthur, Toronto Star columnist, and Karen Stintz, former city councillor and TTC chair, now president and CEO of Variety Village. Karen, let's talk a little bit about the LCBO slapping suppliers with $50 million in fines after accusing them of offering cheaper prices to Quebec. They say that it is the practice in retail and grocery that huge buyers can demand preferential prices, and a lot of the companies that they sued paid up. There were just a few that kind of disputed the charges that were levied against them. But what I'm not seeing is the prices going down at the LCBO. And that's what concerns me more about this than anything.
I know. I couldn't agree with you more. If this monopoly is supposed to have preferential, you know, treatment and buying power that is passed on to the consumer, that I don't know where that's happening. So I guess good on the LCBO for getting some money from suppliers. I mean, I guess, but you know, I wouldn't mind having that money in my pocket.
And Bruce, what do you think about this?
It's a fascinating thing, the LCBO. I used to have friends who used to live in Ontario, and they would collect high-end liquor bottles, and they would buy them through Alberta because you couldn't get them at the LCBO. The LCBO, being a monopoly in general, is fine. Your alcohol prices aren't as cheap as they are, say, in the United States or in a place like Alberta or probably in Quebec. The fact that they are working this hard to keep the supplier prices down versus Quebec, I'd be interested to see side-by-side alcohol prices between the two provinces, because otherwise it feels like the LCBO might be protecting its own profit margin more than anything else, right?
That's what it feels like to me, and it doesn't feel like it's being passed on to the consumer. So you make a big deal about this, and then I'm still paying, you know, what I'm paying for a bottle of wine. Karen, let's go to you on this next story. The TTC is not free. I didn't know that. Well, I do now, because there's a new bunch of ads that are coming out that are just saying, you know, listen, the TTC is not free, and there's a lot of benefits for paying for the TTC. We'll improve service, we'll improve safety, all this kind of thing. You know, the TTC says they lost $124 million in revenue last year due to fare evasion. I don't doubt that number is correct, but I don't think you need to advertise this because, frankly, people know.
Yeah, I agree. People know. But they also know that the TTC has open gates at every single subway entrance. And everybody who rides a subway knows that some people pay and some people don't. And then if you don't pay, there's no consequence. And so, during COVID, I understand the TTC became a de facto shelter system for individuals that didn't feel safe in the shelter. And then, you know, we have had a relatively mild winter, so we haven't experienced that situation back in the TTC. But the reality is the culture of the TTC is that basically if you can't afford to pay, then you use the open gates. But then that sends a message to everybody else. Well, if they don't have to pay, why would I have to pay?
Yeah.
And so the TTC is the creator of this problem. And putting an advertising campaign out to remind people they should pay is the most ineffective strategy that I could possibly imagine. And so if they really want people to pay, they have to redesign their systems, and they actually have to enforce the fare for everybody using the system.
This is almost as bad as the Metrolinx ads that were out, and I think that have since been pulled, sort of shaming people for complaining that these projects are taking so long. It seems to me counterintuitive. Advertising is supposed to get you onside, not repel you. These ads are more like a warning to me than anything else, Bruce.
Those ads in the face of the Eglinton Crosstown is one of the most amazing things. Someone should have been either fired or put in the public square. In terms of the TTC and fares, the TTC as a system, and Karen knows it obviously much better than I do, but it's an experience in collective expectations, regulation, and how a public service works. If you allow the expectation to exist that you don't necessarily have to pay, that there's a way around it, then people will take advantage of that. If you take away that expectation, if you make it harder, then okay, people won't take advantage as often. Mm-hmm. That's about as simple as it gets. Taking out ads, telling people that they should do better. Guys, have you ever dealt with the public before? Because that's not how it works.
It's really true. I mean, sometimes I wonder, particularly with the Metrolinx ads that apparently cost a fortune as well. We had a filmmaker call in saying, listen, I do this kind of work. I make ads like this. Have them call me next time because I could do this for about a tenth of what they paid. So something to keep in mind. I think her name was Carolyn. So Carolyn, if you're listening, hopefully the TTC will call you soon. So a framework for a national school food program has landed on the desk of Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland, and with the federal budget just weeks away, advocates hope the proposal will get the green light. Are you hopeful for this, Karen, or no?
You know, you can't dispute the merits of having this type of framework, but on the other hand, we got to draw the line somewhere, right? And, you know, we've just passed PharmaCare, so, you know, free diabetes medication, free birth control, you know, on the heels of free dental, on the heels of, you know, this, that, and this and that. And, you know, at some point, the government needs to stop buying us with our own money. And we have an affordability crisis, in part because inflation is bad, in part because the government is spending too much money. So as much as this is aspirational, I really hope that the government does draw a line in the sand and say, like, there's just some things we cannot afford.
Bruce, we just have less than a minute. Do you agree or disagree with Karen?
I disagree on a couple of different things there. But one is that in an affordability crisis, it probably would highlight the fact that if you're going to draw the line somewhere, you probably don't want to draw the line where kids aren't getting fed on the other side of it. I've talked to teachers who have worked in the city. I've talked to teachers who have worked in rural situations. I've talked to teachers who have had to set up meal programs in their own schools where they volunteered and fed the kids because they weren't getting fed at home. This is one of the best ways to level the playing field for a lot of different schools. You don't necessarily have to do it nationally, I would say. I think you could probably do it in places of higher need, but this is something I think that could be a real, again, social leveler and something that could help with the affordability crisis.
Thank you so much. That is all the time we have. That was the Smart Speakers, Bruce Arthur, Toronto Star columnist, and Karen Stintz, president and CEO of Variety Village. Have a great weekend, you guys.
Thank you.
Hey, Richard.
I'm Richard Krause, sitting in on The Rush here till 6 o'clock. Stay with me. Lots more to come.